C4. Number 10A.
Yesterday, we tried to see if, with a knowledge of the categories of being, therefore with the divine system of reference, we could, in a deductive way, starting out from principle and deducting not atomistically but categorically, if from that principle, through that deduction, we could see what each chapter of the 16th chapter in the textbook would have to present. It is therefore a method that shows how revelation would have operated in Mrs. Eddy's consciousness, operated so that little by little she was aware of the finer layout of being. As we have seen, it has taken her a lifetime to write the textbook until she had it in that way which she left it today. And now, today, we can investigate it because we now know the categories and therefore can read that textbook categorically and no more atomistically. And if we do that, we can see if our deductions which we have made are right or not. So what we do now, from now on until the end of the week, would be to investigate what Mrs. Eddy has written and try to see from this inductive way, going out from the given text, if with the inductive way, we could see, so to say, the structure of the textbook. We start with prayer and investigate the tonality of prayer, the standpoint of prayer, and then we go through the seventh subject and see how that standpoint of prayer is elaborated through the seven subjects. When we read the chapter on prayer, we see at once that the office of prayer is to give us a right approach to the one being, to God. Prayer in all religion is that. In all religion, prayer seems to be a method of how to approach the infinite, no matter how God is called, so as we have a communion with that God for the purpose that that God rewards us and gives us what we desire. Mrs. Eddy naturally investigates this whole attitude and through the lens of science begins to analyze if such an attitude is right and what attitude of prayer is right. The great question is, any prayer right? Is it enough that we pray, or do we have to see that there are certain criteria that have to be fulfilled in order that the prayer is a right prayer and not a wrong prayer? Generally, in Christianity, in the Christian religions, it is believed that prayer is always right, is always good, no harm can be done through prayer, that any prayer is good and will bless, whereas Mrs. Eddy takes here quite a different standpoint, and she even tells us that prayer can be of evil, of an evil. For instance, she says, sin is not cancelled merely by praying and uttering desires which are not real can just lead us into the temptation that we think because we have prayed, we have done all what is necessary, and therefore we just are in an attitude of not trying to correct that which needs to be corrected. So prayer can be of evil, and the moment we see that, naturally we have to ask ourselves, when is prayer good? what are the criterions for a scientific prayer. When she does that, she brings up at once that prayer must be mental, that prayer is an inward attitude and has nothing to do with an outward form of prayer. Through the whole chapter, we can see that she takes up the question that theological prayer does not really give us a right sense. She analyzes and sees the incorrectness of all those various kinds of theological prayers, like ritualistic prayer, like outward worship, like long prayers, wordy prayers, praying machines. Very often the statements we make in prayer resemble a praying machine, just going over and over and repeating the same statement, the scientific statement of being, without really knowing what we say, repeating statements from the textbook, some rules of the textbook, and they can just be of the same nature as a praying machine, just repetition and repetition. She takes up the idea that prayer has nothing to do with just requesting something from God, with imploring God to do something, with asking God, with pleading for benefaction, pleading for unmerited pardon. You see, if you go through that text, just trying to see what Mrs. Eddy says is a wrong sense of prayer, that prayer which is of evil. We encounter in the text quite a lot of such prayers. Whereas for her, she says prayers are mental. She says it is an inner attitude. And when we ask what is the general tone of that inner attitude that constitutes true prayer, then we see always one and the same thing, that she shows that the aim of prayer is not to call down blessings from God, that the aim of prayer is something very different, namely to bring us into harmony with God. This is her strong point, that she says prayer is an attitude which brings us into unity with God, that brings us into harmony with God. It says to bring us into harmony with the signs of being, to gain the divine presence. Can you see? She doesn't say to gain some benefactions, to gain a reward. That's not the aim of a prayer. The aim of a prayer is, can we be one with the nature of God? That's prayer for her. She says that the aim of prayer is to lead us into all truth. Again, we have no ulterior motive. Thank you. No ulterior motive in our prayer, except there is only one desire, namely, how to be at one in unity with God, with the divine nature, with the signs of being. The scriptural note which she gives at the beginning of the chapter, and which very often indicate in biblical language the core of a chapter, is here quite remarkable, especially if one takes the modern translation of that verse and not the old translation which she had to use, because at her time, these modern translators and the investigation into the Bible and the Bible critics has not have attained that standard as it has today. The modern translation would state it like this, that when Jesus said, I tell you then, whatever you ask for in prayer, believe that you have received it, and it will be yours. It is no more in the future tense that we will receive it, but that we have received it. One can see that prayer, therefore, goes out from the fulfilled sense. A true prayer always goes out from answered prayer and not from requesting and asking and pleading. Believe that you have received it, that we are at one with the nature of God, that we are the very manifestation of God. And the first sentence in that chapter is very indicative to give the tone of the chapter. The prayer that reforms the sinner and heals the sick is an absolute faith. And then she depicts what is an absolute faith. She says it's an absolute faith that all things are possible to God, and then depicts that faith, namely a spiritual understanding of Him, comma, an unselfed love. I think in these two terms, spiritual understanding and unselfed love, lies the key to prayer. It says that it is a spiritual understanding of Him. That's prayer. A prayer which says, I understand in my consciousness, in my mentality, I understand the nature of God. I'm not going to ask that the nature of God is coming to me. I go out from answer prayer. I go out from the fact that I have received it, that the unity of God and man is the established fact from which I start. Prayer is not going to ask, how can I be one with God and how can I crawl up to the throne of God? It is going out from the throne of God and says, I am one with the synonymous terms, and to contemplate, to meditate on that oneness with the signs of being, that is really prayer. It's a spiritual understanding of Him, comma, an unselfed love. It is not a selfless love. It's an unselfed love. It's not an unselfish love. Unselfed is much a bigger concept than to be unselfish. Unself means that the self is no more playing a part, that we are not praying as a self to God, but that we are actually praying as a principled attitude to God, and no more as a self, that therefore the concept that I am somebody who wants to be good and who wants to be one with God and therefore receive God's blessing is still a religious sense. There is no personal I that can pray to God. I have to put my personal I, my personal self away and just see that in reality there is only this unity of a principled attitude with principle. If I have that, I have touched the true standpoint of prayer. Can you see when we look at this that nothing enters in which says, do I get something from prayer? How shall I pray that I get more from prayer? Will God give me something? It is a prayer here is a pondering, a meditating, an inward affirmation of man's unity with God, or of the unity of spiritual understanding with God. This is prayer. And this calls down those effects that God wants to give us. Therefore, the second biblical note shows us that it is not we who really can formulate our desires and say we have already received them. The second biblical motto here, or scriptural note here, gives a complementary exposition for that first verse. It says, your Father knoweth what things ye have need of before ye ask Him. I like to put the accent on your Father, and not so much your Father knoweth. Your Father knows. Not I know what things I have need of. It is that unselfed love which says, I'm not an important factor in that whole prayer. The important factor is that the Father knows. He knows what I need. He knows what He should give me. He knows my mission. He knows my plan. He knows what is right for me. I don't know. Therefore, I put myself away. Mary's put out of the way. It's the unselfed love, a love that has no more a self, no more a person. And so in this way, I really can start out from an impersonal sense of prayer. I think this is quite impressive to see that, because it gives one a sense that prayer has no more to do with that old theological prayer that says if you pray to God and present your desires and your wishes and your needs and your worries and so on, He will do something to you. Going out from that standpoint would go out from lack, and lack can never communicate with fullness. Prayer goes right from the start out from the fact that we have the perfection within ourselves. It is a spiritual understanding of Him. We go out therefore right at the beginning from perfection, from a spiritual understanding of the nature of mind and spirit and soul and principle and life and truth and love, and see that in that spiritual understanding there is no self. And in that spiritual understanding we see is there exists a unity with the seven synonymous terms, and they always give to each situation what the seven synonymous term can give. In order to cultivate that attitude, Mrs. Eddy presents that standpoint through the seven synonymous terms. So I take the seven subject quickly, which you have on your page now. I ask you to write out just on one page for each chapter the epitomes of the seven subjects so that you have it in front of you, and it is much easier to talk to about it, and it's easier for you to follow my exposition. The first prayer is the prayer of mind, really. It presents now mind from the standpoint of the chapter on prayer, therefore characterizes mind in a way which no other chapter will anymore characterize. Now we begin to structure, so to say, our synonymous terms according to the matrix of the textbook, and as we do that we will watch how, say, mind in those 16 chapters will never really repeat themselves again. Naturally, it's always difficult to epitomize a subject. And therefore, this is a general comment I give on these epitomes in the whole of the structure book. These epitomes are approximation, so to say, to the tone. They can never really give the whole tone. And because if you, say, reduce 10 pages or 15 pages just to one line, naturally you can see that you have to leave out a lot. And it is one of the most difficult thing for spiritual sense and scientific sense to pick out just that main tone which seems to be the common denominator running through the whole subject. So don't be too much impressed by my wording. Feel free to have your own wording, but your own wording naturally must be testified, must be proved by the text itself. So what I want to do is just to give tonality. The tonality here, I start with mind, seems to be that prayer of wisdom which acts through true desire, namely the desire to know God as He is. Perhaps today I would write it that way, that it is the desire, the prayer of true desire to know God as He is. And naturally that is wisdom. What does Mrs. Eddy say here? That it is actually our wisdom that we are not trying to formulate our own thoughts about God, but that we let mind mold our desires, that we do not interfere with our concept, but that we let the divine mind mold our desires so that they can be fulfilled. Only if our desires are in agreement with mind's wisdom, mind's intelligence, only then our desires find fulfillment. So here Mrs. Eddy gives really a terrific picture of desiring God, to accept God as He is and not in another way. This tone has seven subtones, just as the other prayers have seven subtones, so that the whole chapter really is a 7x7. But I'm not going to take them, because that would not be the purpose of this week's work. We just want to see how the attitude of prayer as coming into unity with God can be elaborated through the seven. The first point, how to be in unity with God, is naturally the desire within us to know God as He is. And then, through the subtones, Mrs. Eddy would give a clear explanation of what God is. Just to give you an example, and I hope I'm not going to do that anymore, I want to give you the subtones, and to show how beautiful really the chapter on prayer is, that actually the first page and a half already is a terrific cornerstone for the whole chapter, because it presents us really with the vision of the seven synonymous term, or the nature of the seven synonymous term, right in that first prayer of mind. Because if we have the true desire to know God as He is, Mrs. Eddy would explain how God is. What does she say here? See, she says here, we should desire to know God as He is. How is He? And the seven subtones just run like this, that she says, mind is that which molds our thought. It's not we that mold our thought. It's God, the nature of mind, is that mold and fashions our thoughts and our desires. In spirit, she says, that God is substance, because true desire does not return void. It comes right back with the fullness of substance. In soul, she says, that God does not change. He is not a changeable God. He is what He is, and therefore will always call down infinite blessing if we approach Him rightly. In principle, she shows that God is an impersonal principle and therefore is not moved by any personal sense or by any human sense. It's a scientific God, not a personal God. And then she comes to life and shows that God is the fullness of being, and that He pours out more, already now, more than what we accept. Really are saying, don't always pray for something, you already get more than what you accept. A complete change of attitude takes place, that the nature of life is so that it always has to pour out abundantly, redundantly, more than what is necessary. Life is that redundancy principle that pours out more than what we need and what we accept. Then he shows the nature of God as truth and says God is already doing right. You don't have to pray to Him and say, will you please do right and do what you should do? He's already doing what has to be done. And in love, he says, God's nature is love. His work is done. Don't try to make him work. His work is done, is fulfilled. Therefore, go out from that standpoint. So I just wanted to show you that when one can read the textbook in tonality, that we can see what an enormous picture prayer is opening up right at the beginning of the chapter. And actually we see that this must be stated right at the beginning, so that we have already a full sense and a perfect sense of the seven synonymous terms at the moment when we approach God. Through what? Through true desire. Then, when we have that true desire, comes the subject of spirit, the prayer of spirit, which we have summarized as the prayer of reflection, through the longing to express divine qualities. Here spirit is symbolized through reflecting divine qualities. It says that is prayer. If within ourselves express divine qualities instead of asking that God gives us divine qualities, that we go out from a spiritual understanding that we are one with the seven synonymous terms. If we are one with the seven synonymous terms, we are one with all the qualities of God, divine qualities of God, and so we jolly well can express them.